This is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files. Podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
Scientists who study whales and dolphins are puzzled about repeated strandings of large numbers of dolphins and whales on or around King Island near the state of Tasmania, Australia. There was also the highly strange, perhaps even unprecedented behavior in Manila Bay, Philippines last month on February 10th, when 500 melon-headed dolphins filled Manila Bay and swam back and forth as if completely disoriented. Whales, dolphins, and porpoises are also known as cetaceans. All cetaceans are mammals that once lived on land some 50 to 60 million years ago. In fact, their closest living genetic relatives are hippopotamuses. Something made cetacean ancestors leave land for the seas, and now whales, dolphins, and porpoises live in the oceans, rivers, and seas. But because they are mammals, they still must breathe oxygen into their lungs. That's what the blowholes are for on top of their heads. As deep as some whales dive, within an hour or two, the big creatures must swim back to the surface to breathe. Like mammals, cetaceans also give birth to live young, but underwater. Whales use a form of sonar called echolocation to locate and identify objects around them. It's also thought that whales use the Earth's magnetic fields to help navigate. Whales and dolphins generally live between 40 and 90 years, and species such as sperm whales grow up in close family pods that travel and hunt together all their lives. Unlike those tight whale and dolphin families, porpoises are more individual and less group dependent. That difference might be one of the reasons why whales and dolphins strand themselves on beaches, while usually porpoises do not. The unanswered scientific question is, do healthy whales and dolphins follow a family leader onto beaches for unknown reasons, even when beaching can mean death for some or all of the family pod? This week, I talk with a whale expert about the most recent March 2nd mysterious dolphin strandings and previous three dolphin and sperm whale strandings all around King Island north of Tasmania. He is Scott Baker, Ph.D., Associate Director of the Marine Mammal Institute at Oregon State University and Adjunct Professor of Molecular Ecology and Evolution at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. Dr. Baker received his Ph.D. in zoology with a study of humpback whales in southeast Alaska and Hawaii. Dr. Baker is also puzzled by the repeated strandings of so many large marine animals in the same area near Tasmania between November 2008 and March 2009.
Tasmania has had a series of strandings over the last few months. Beginning in November in 2008, about 4 months ago, they had 60 pilot whales strand on Anthony Beach, which is on the western edge of northern Tasmania, not far from King Island. And then on November 29th, another 150 stranded, again, in a very similar area. Unfortunately, in that second very large stranding, all the animals died. Then in January, there was a stranding of about 50 sperm whales, again, in a very similar area. And they all died. It's very difficult to attempt any kind of rescue on such large animals. And then most recently, just a few days ago, this group of nearly 200 pilot whales and a small number of bottlenose dolphins. This is a little unusual, having four, most of which involving such a large number of animals.
What is your professional guess, given a long career with cetaceans, about what is going on?
Well, I think at first it's fair to admit that we have no agreed scientific explanation for these kinds of mass strandings. But it is important to realize that first, these are highly social animals, and that's what characterizes these mass strandings from other sorts of strandings of single individuals. So these kind of mass strandings don't occur with baleen whales, that is, you know, humpback whales or gray whales or blue or fin. Those animals may strand, but only as individuals. The mass stranding, large numbers, are only these highly social species like longfin pilot whales and sperm whales. It's also thought that these animals associate around matriarchs, that they have what's called a matrilineal society. So in some cases, male and female offspring of a mother may remain with the pod all their lives. And that gives this sort of social cohesion or social bond that's thought to be very important in probably in initiating these events. But what causes them? That's really just not been possible to determine. But there are a number of reasonable theories. One that's probably been, I think, generally accepted for the last few decades is that the whales move into these shallow areas, like a shallow, sloping, sandy beach, and their sonar becomes confused because the sonar bounces off of the shallow slope and doesn't return to them. So they think they're in deep water when, in fact, they're moving into shallow areas, and then they become trapped.
But whales left land about 60 million years ago, if I understand the literature correctly.
That's correct, yes, about 60 million years ago.
Okay. And you would think in 60 million years that this large animal evolving in the oceans would not be vulnerable to something like echolocation being fouled up by approaching close to shore.
Well, all animals, just like humans, make mistakes. We're seeing, you know, an economic mass stranding, occurring here in the U.S. Social animals, part of the cost of sociality is group thinking, and that leads to stampedes. It leads to stock market crashes. But I think that that is a component of this. So these are very sophisticated animals with very sophisticated sonar, but anyone can make a mistake.
4 mass strandings in 4 months suggests that something might be going on, and I'm curious if you have seen lab results from the necropsies on the animals yet.
No, I don't think there's been time for that. And typically, these have not shown anything. I'm not aware of really any mass stranding in Australia or New Zealand, and there have been many of them, where necropsy results suggested that there was widespread illness among the individuals. Most of them appear to be healthy. Now, that's not to say that one of these individuals is not sick, and that might be a key individual, but it's been very difficult to determine that. There were nearly 200 individuals in this mass stranding, 150 of which died. It would be very unusual to be able to complete detailed necropsy. It would be impossible on all of them. So if one of them was the key matriarch and that individual was sick, unfortunately, we only have a fairly low probability of detecting that.
Huh. Well, I have in front of me an article about the whole history of beached cetaceans.
Right.
That begins this way. Another means by which sonar could be hurting whales is a form of decompression sickness. This was first raised by pathological examinations after 14 beaked whales stranded in the Canary Islands. The stranding happened on September 24, 2002, close to the operating area of Neotapan, which was an international naval exercise, for about 4 hours after the activation of mid-frequency sonar. The team of scientists found acute tissue damage from gas bubble lesions, which are indicative of decompression sickness. The precise mechanism of how sonar causes bubble formation is not fully known. It could be due to whales panicking and surfacing too rapidly in an attempt to escape the sonar pulses. Could there be some kind of secret operation going on, and the only way to confirm this would be necropsies on all of the available dead bodies?
Well, the decompression hypothesis is actually pretty well established now in those cases where it appears that it's a response to this Navy mid-range sonar. You're right, that description is quite accurate. The sound is apparently stampeding the animals into a shallow area, and then the animals are pushed up into shallow depths where they haven't had time to decompress. Now, this came as a bit of a surprise to a lot of biologists involved in the study of marine mammals, because we had long assumed that cetaceans, whales, and dolphins had some form of natural protection against the bends. But it turns out that that may have been not entirely correct, that if they are deep-diving animals, pilot whales and sperm whales are in that category, along with beaked whales, are suddenly driven up into shallow water where they can't perform these series of these sort of a semi-decompression dives to moderate depths, that they could be suffering the bends. Now, I would also, though, admit that if it is a military operation. Whether we can obtain that information, I can't be absolutely sure of that, but I could be quite sure that there will be an attempt made to obtain that information. Certainly military operations are a potential, and there have been places where there's been quite a direct correlation, almost certainly a causal mechanism involved. But mass strandings of pilot whales have been going on since the time of Aristotle. He commented on them in the Mediterranean 2,500 years ago. He had no explanation for them either. But there is an alternate hypothesis in this case, and that has been proposed by some Australian scientists based on the pattern of mass strandings over the last few decades, that there are these decadal, you know, about every 10-year cycles of westerly winds that shift the areas of productivity in that part of the world.
Well, do you mean by productivity that the food that the whales live off of would be going in different parts of the ocean?
Exactly. Would be shifted, perhaps shifted more inshore or into this area of fairly shallow sandy banks. And the whales, pilot whales and the sperm whales, in pursuing their prey into these somewhat unfamiliar territories, these shallow waters, are actually getting confused, disoriented, and stranding themselves.
Whales and dolphins are supposed to be highly intelligent, correct?
Most whales and dolphins have a very high degree of cognitive ability, that is, that we would consider intelligence, something comparable to our own problem-solving abilities, yes.
Doesn't that make strandings even more mysterious, especially at the level of 200, regardless of social groupings, that they are so intelligent, they have been living and evolving in the oceans of this planet for 60 million years, and it makes it seem so difficult to understand why they would not already know how to avoid these situations that put them into beaches.
I agree. I think it's one of the great mysteries of sociality in this case, because I think it is somehow tied to the fact that these species, longfin pilot and sperm whales primarily, are highly social.
Now, what is your own opinion about the possibility that magnetic field anomalies, it could be an underground volcano erupting, it could be a seismic event, it could be that there really is some pole shifting to South Africa, and then solar flares that could interrupt with the magnetic fields and cause anomalies. What is your own personal feeling about magnetic field anomalies affecting the cetaceans and causing beachings?
Well, I think it's unlikely to be the causal explanation for the beachings. It may, though, have some association with where these strandings occur, because they do seem to occur in specific areas over time, repeatedly. And it may well be that these are on these magnetic paths that the animals are using for navigation. We don't really know the extent to which they rely on magnetic cues, but it seems likely that it's certainly possible that there are some magnetic cues that they use. If so, then they may be following these paths, and if these beaches are on or near those paths, then they're simply in the way of the movement of the animal. So it's not a causal mechanism, it's a happen chance.
But again, it seems as if these very intelligent, large, evolving animals should not succumb to confusion with their echolocation and magnetic fields.
Well, that is one of the puzzling aspects of the strandings. The animals often seem to be intentionally stranding, and this is something that some of the hypotheses don't explain. And this was true at least in some of these recent events in Tasmania. An effort was made to return the animals to deeper water, and in some cases, the animals simply turned around and went straight back. And that's most easily explained by this social phenomena, this group panic or group distress. The individuals that are taken out into deep water, they may want to be in deep water. They may recognize they're in deep water, but they hear the distressed calls of their kin on the beach, and they simply go back. We might say that that's not a very adaptive mechanism, but it's the part of this cost of the sociality, just like disease is a cost of sociality. We live in large groups, and so we're susceptible to epidemics. And so you might say, well, why live in a large group? We should all be living in little huts, you know, 10 or 15 miles away from each other. But there are benefits to living together, and there are benefits to the sociality of these species. These are very successful species. There are populations worldwide, hundreds of thousands of individuals, but they are susceptible to these tragic mistakes.
Well, they're such wonderful creatures. And as one of the people said on this recent Tasmania, it broke my heart to hear them crying.
I agree with that. To hear them on the beach dying, surrounded by their friends and their family, is quite tragic.
And hard to understand if they are healthy.
Well, almost certainly some or even most of them are healthy. And that's what makes it, I think, all the more puzzling. But it may well be individuals within the group that are truly in distress of some kind.
How do you go forward from here as a cetacean expert with others in studying these strandings, these beachings of so many animals if they persist?
Well, we need to know more about them in the wild. So one of our interests has been taking the methods that we've used to study the genetic relatedness, the kinship of these individuals on the beach, and apply that to living populations in the wild, that is, ones that are not in distress. Because some of what we found with these stranded pods was a little unexpected. We found, in fact, they were not all close relatives to each other. They were not all part of the same matriline. They appeared to be mixes of different groups. And we need to know if that's the case in the wild. We can also begin to better understand their movement patterns with methods like satellite tagging. And I did notice that the Australian scientists were able to put a small number of these satellite tags on some of the animals that has stranded late last year. And I happened to be with a colleague from the Australian Marine Mammal Center, Nick Gales, and he reported that these tags had been quite successful and that the animals that had been saved, that had been released back into the deeper water, some of them seemed to behave quite normally and moved back out into deep water and seemed to be swimming together again.
Well, then, Dr. Baker, did you ask him, why do you think they stranded in the first place?
Nick and I have had long conversations about this. All marine mammal scientists have these conversations over a couple of beers every evening, and we would cover pretty much the exact range of them that you and I have covered today. But we don't have a single explanation. There may not be a single explanation. Each stranding may be a little bit different.
Well, if you found a mixture of what would be not relatives in a pod with others that were not part of a blood family, doesn't that increase the possibility that there is something in the environment that periodically changes enough to disorient the cetaceans and cause these huge strandings?
Well, it does shift a little bit the likelihood of some of the explanations, but without the knowledge of what their natural social groupings are, I don't think we can yet interpret that too much. If we go out and we find that these large pods are typically made up of a mix of different family groups, so it's really unlikely that they could be close relatives to that many individuals. It may be that there's a smaller family groups, but that they associate together just as we do in communities, and those communities have almost as much cohesion as the blood kin.
But there's still a possibility in the huge stranding of the pilot whales and a few dolphins and the previous three strandings in Tasmania that there might be something going on in the environment that no human yet understands that's causing these massive repeated strandings.
Causing or influencing. So if this hypothesis about these 10-year shifts in prey are correct, and there may be large numbers of them out there all the time, but moving around safely, so to speak, without making mistakes. But it may be that they're now pursuing prey into areas that they're just not familiar with. You know, that would be a consistent explanation for the fact that there have been three of these pilot whales and the sperm whale, given that the two species feed on similar prey, particularly deepwater squid. So if the wind patterns have driven the deepwater squid up into shallower water, then these animals are just in unfamiliar territory, so to speak.
So a larger context of possible cause for all of these recent large strandings off of Tasmania, the melon-headed dolphins in Manila Bay, might be related to global warming, i.e. temperatures are changing, water temperatures are changing. And that means that species in the food chain that have been in various parts of the oceans could be changing, migrating away from certain temperatures, and this might be affecting the cetaceans?
Well, that's possible. I don't know that it's explained these particular events and the melon-headed whales in the Philippines. I think we had to look in more detail at local patterns And the waters around Australia and Tasmania almost certainly are warming. Whether that's good or bad for the pilot whales is, of course, harder to tell. In New Zealand, where the pilot whales strand along quite a gradient of latitude, from near tropical beaches on the North Island down to these subantarctic beaches, we haven't seen a strong trend or change that appears related to global temperature increase. But I think that is something that we may see in the future. Again, it may only influence where it happens, not why it happens.
Dr. Baker is putting me in touch with the Tasmanian Department of Primary Industries and Parks to request copies of whatever necropsy reports will be made available from the King Island March 2nd stranding of nearly 200 pilot whales and other dolphins. Whatever I learn, I will report in another upcoming Earth Files and podcast.
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.